Welcome to the Media Matters podcast, presented by myself, Colette Sexton, news correspondent at the Sunday Business Post. In each episode, we talk to an expert in the media and marketing industry and pick their brain on the topics that matter. This month, my guest is Áine O'Mara. Áine has worked in the media industry for over 13 years, first as a camera operator and later as a producer and director, covering stories in documentary, lifestyle programming and current affairs. Previously, she was field producer for an international news channel based in Turkey, producing content on everything from the Islamic State in Iraq to the US elections. Her interest for the last few years has shifted towards media policy, primarily how to make the industry better, both for audiences and the professionals who work in it. Now she is program leader for Headline, the National Media Monitoring Program for Mental Health and Suicide. Welcome, Áine. Will you take me through the history of Headline first and what its goals are?
Sure. Headline was, the whole idea of Headline came around in 2004. It was a concept by a charity known at the time as Schizophrenia Ireland, which then became known as Shine. And they noticed a big problem really with misrepresentation of mental health, particularly the severe end of mental illness, whether that's schizophrenia, psychosis, bipolar, schizoaffective disorder, any number of issues they felt were either misrepresented or completely absent, really, from Irish media. So they set about starting a monitoring program, and that eventually turned into Headline in 2007, where the original concept was let's monitor Irish media, and if there are issues, let's try and tackle them head on.
And so Headline did find issues, and I'm gathering.
Headline found issues, yes. By and large, I have to say Irish media are pretty good, if relatively speaking, within the international media. But yeah, there are definitely issues in terms of misrepresentation. They moved then more into suicide prevention, and they realised that the representation of suicide in Irish media was actually quite dangerous. And by following on from international guidelines from the World Health Organization and the Samaritans, they set about really just trying to get the Irish media to follow those guidelines.
Okay, so in the interest of transparency, where does Headline get its funding from?
Headline is a program of Shine. Mm-hmm. Shine, once they identified that this was definitely a necessary program, they looked for funding everywhere and they found it in NOSP, which is the National Office for Suicide Prevention. So Headline actually receives 100% of its funding from the National Office of Suicide Prevention.
And are you kind of sorted future-wise? Have they guaranteed your funding for a certain number of years, or how does it work in that regard?
I'm not actually sure. I assume that as long as we keep doing what we're doing and we see some level of improvement in the Irish media, we'll keep funding, getting funded.
So on average, more than 700 individuals take their own lives by suicide each year across both the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And it's estimated that at least 6 people are directly affected by each suicide death. So no one wants to intrude on a family's grief, but the media does have a responsibility to report on what is a big public health issue. So when journalists are reporting on suicides, what do you think they should be doing?
Well, I suppose the first thing to mention is they should probably be pointing towards helplines and support. There's a certain amount of follow-through, really, that we should be expecting from journalists. And that's if you want to talk about a really important public health issue, then follow through, then give those helplines. That costs nothing when you're dealing with online publications. It's space on a screen. I appreciate that. When it's a print publication, or if it's minutes at the end of a documentary or whatever it might be, that costs money. But there is a responsibility there to have those helplines up there.
And when you bring this up with media organisations, are they generally happy to share the details with you? Are they, prior to not sharing the details, do they just not understand that that's something that they should be doing?
No, I think more and more people are putting up the helplines. I suppose it's about putting up relevant helplines as well, that if you're doing a story on eating disorders, let's say, then along with Samaritans, maybe put up Bodywise as well, who are an excellent organisation. If you're doing something on severe mental illnesses, maybe put up Shine's services. If you're dealing with an issue about people not being able to get access to services, maybe put up Pieta House's details. They have really excellent services and very short waiting lists.
So in terms of reporting on suicide and mental health, what kind of, what words and what terms should journalists avoid using?
Well, language is the big thing. I suppose commit suicide is the number one. I mean, suicide hasn't been a crime in Ireland since 1993. So it's kind of time to move along now with that. There are people who say, you know, it's just a word, it doesn't matter, but it does. It just adds to the stigma of an already pretty difficult thing to deal with, especially for families. I mean, that's part of the reason why suicide in Ireland is one of the most underreported rates in Europe. And that goes back to stigma. People maybe it's communities, maybe it's the families themselves, or maybe it's the coroner in a local town. They say, well, no, I don't want to identify that as a suicide because it's not going to look good for the family. I mean, maybe that goes back to the time when you couldn't bury somebody in the local Catholic graveyard because it was a suicide. But I think times have changed, and I think language needs to change with that too.
So in terms of the commit suicide term, I think that a lot of people, it just kind of rolls off the tongue for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can we get them to change that and to realise that, you know, it's better to say die by suicide or killed oneself or those other kind of better terms, I suppose, that don't have as much stigma attached to them?
Well, the last thing I want to be doing, or anyone in a headline, is to be sending finger-wagging emails to editors or journalists asking, you know, oh, you said this, can you change it to that? It's irritating, if anything. I've been on the receiving end of missives from other charities or other organisations where I've said something wrong in a report. And it is irritating because, you know, there are already so many pressures on you as a journalist to get a deadline and maybe be the first to broadcast, first to print, whatever it might be. I think the thing about language and the thing about using commit suicide is let's have a chat about it. Let's have training sessions. Let's try and just force a change nearly in society. If the papers do it, if people are reading the correct terminology, they'll start saying it. The media has a huge amount of influence in how you speak.
In terms of reporting areas where people might go to die by suicide, would you agree with that reporting of locations, or do you think that the media should completely stay away from giving specifics in terms of areas or anything like that?
Well, in general, it's not very helpful. I suppose the people in a locality where there are high amounts of suicide, they already know the areas. I suppose there isn't really a need to highlight an area even more. I suppose there's an idea that if you mention a particular place, that it puts an idea in somebody's head that, yeah, okay, I'll go there, I'll do that. Or if they identify with a particular person in the story, that they'll say, oh, well, actually, I kind of see myself in them and it worked out okay for them. Maybe I'll do that. You know, that's what we're kind of trying to get away from. Actually, funnily enough, last week it was there was a really excellent piece done in the Irish Times about a particular area in Derry, and the focus was on a particular location, but they handled it really, really well because they spoke to somebody who had been to that location and had attempted suicide, but through the services that were in place at that location, they took a step back and didn't follow through, I suppose. So that was a really good way, I suppose, of addressing a location without being irresponsible about it.
Do you think that there should be rules in place around reporting on suicide and mental health issues?
I would say, in general, rules are helpful, but I think there's always room for editorial judgment and common sense as well. Common sense is a huge part of it. You know, there shouldn't be a need for rules because people should be using their own judgment. And if you want to proclaim freedom of the press and this is censorship and everything else that is hurled at us from when we do send out our emails, you know, you just have to think about the person reading the story, that they might be in a vulnerable situation, and maybe editors will say, well, that's not our job. Our job is to tell the truth. Yes, it is. But you can choose which elements of an interview you use. You can choose what language you use.
Do you think that there is a problem at the moment with the Irish media in terms of, you know, newspapers are dropping in circulation, they need to, you know, sell as many papers as possible. So if they put something glamorizing or scandalizing on a front page, they're likely to sell more copies. So they're weighing up a business versus maybe kind of obligation to the public.
Yeah, possibly. I would be really disappointed if that were the case. We have no data at the moment that proves that. And that would be so disappointing if that were the case. Maybe that is the reality, I don't know. But I mean, we had one case where a paper asked for a case study, which is, you know, often the way, from Shine, and they wanted to cover a story on schizophrenia. They had no experience of it. They knew that it hadn't been covered before with the paper, so they asked for a case study. They got somebody, and they did the interview. And the person that they spoke to was in full recovery. You know, you wouldn't know they had schizophrenia if you met them on the street or if you met them in the hairdressers or anywhere. That's the thing. People with mental illnesses are people. They are just people. There are no identifiers. They're not people running around with their hands through their hair or, you know, looking out through raindrops on a window pane or anything like that. They look like you and me.
Live their lives.
Exactly. Yeah. They just get on with it sometimes. But this person that we gave to the paper talked about the delusions that he had at a particular time. And the delusions were obviously never acted out, nothing like that. But the paper chose to run a headline that was so damaging to that person that they've never recovered. That's the fallout from irresponsible journalism.
That's horrific.
It literally can ruin somebody's life. And that's what we are trying to prevent.
So in Shine, are you less likely to want to give case studies forward like that to people in the media because you're afraid of what damage that could do to that person who's recovering?
We would have to be really careful about it. It would have to be a good match. I suppose the handy thing about Headline is that we have this huge bank of data of monitoring data that goes back years now, showing how papers or channels or radio programs, whatever it might be, perform in terms of the stigmatizing language they use and the instances of guideline breaches, things like that. So we can look at that and say, oh, actually, this journalist frequently says crazed. This journalist frequently says psycho. This journalist frequently says whatever, you know, and if that's the case, you know, we'll be highly unlikely to hand over a case study because sometimes it is a case of life and death. The issue there, though, is you don't want to be a gatekeeper. And some of our recent research has pointed that towards that journalists are really struggling to find solid case studies now because NGOs or charities are being very protective of their clients and they have good reason to. Sometimes. So it's a really difficult balance to reach. And I suppose that can only happen through more collaboration between the likes of ourselves and the industry.
I know that Headline provides training to journalists and trainee journalists. So how does that work?
Yeah, well, so Headline obviously has been around now for over a decade. And in that time, they developed beyond just monitoring and more towards education and kind of a long-term approach to how can we get journalists on board with these guidelines. And that was through education and Headline. And I think yourself, you were involved in you received some Headline training back in the day.
I did, yes. When I was in my master's in journalism in NUIG, that's when I first learned about Headline. And that's when things were brought up to me about reporting on suicide and mental health issues that, to be honest, I had never thought about until that day. And now I'm very careful in my language around those issues. So I think it's a really, really good service.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The idea with working with young journalists is that once you get your foot in the door, it is just hell for leather. Cover your stories, head down, do what you're told, get out there, cover what you're told to cover. And there isn't necessarily that space to stop and consider, oh wait, actually, how am I writing this story? How am I covering this story? I know I've been told to do this, but actually that it doesn't feel right, or you know, whatever it might be. Training young journalists while they're still in college gives them that space to actually explore editorial decisions. And one of the new educational programs we'll be working on next year is providing a much more kind of a multimedia approach to it. So here's a transcript of an interview that was picked up at the scene. Here's the raw footage that your cameraman has picked up. And that's the thing, it's not just journalists, it's cameramen as well. And I suppose that's quite special to me as well, because I was that camera operator at one point, focusing in on blood at a scene, and it may never be used, but your crews are still exposed to that kind of detail. And I suppose audiences as well need to remember that journalists provide a very valuable filtering process for them, and journalists are often the first on a scene. So if you are in that situation, you need to have that experience of, okay, well, I'm in this situation now. I have the option to do this, or I have the option to do that. What am I going to do? What are my choices? And it is about choice at the end of the day. It's the choice of what language you use. It's the choice of the contributor you use. And another really frustrating thing for journalists, which I'm finding more and more, is the issue of dealing with official sources. That's one thing that's come up a lot in our recent research, and that's that Gardaí don't really want to come right out and say something like murder-suicide. The coroner doesn't want to come right out and say suicide, whatever it might be. And you're creating a vacuum where sensation really and speculation can thrive.
Mm.
And if you remove that and actually get good, solid official sources, then that's half the battle, I think, for journalists, especially in the early days of a story. But yeah, that's the plan for the new educational programs, and we'll be rolling those out next year, I hope.
And in terms of the Garda Press Office and so on, have you been in touch with them? Are you trying to get in there to talk to them about how they do talk to journalists in these situations?
Oh, that will definitely be something that we're tackling once our research is complete. The research at the moment, it's ongoing, but the findings are pretty strong on that front, that getting official sources to come out with clear information is very difficult.
And in terms of your education programme, so obviously you're going around to the universities, I assume, that are offering the journalism courses. Do you get into many newsrooms that are actively working, or is it hard to get in and get the time?
Well, I've only been with Headline, 5 months, I suppose, by the time this will be broadcast. So I haven't gotten into any newsroom. I haven't been in a newsroom, apart from the one I walked into today, since I was a producer in Turkey. So no, I'm not in newsrooms yet, but it is an open invitation. I mean, before we had this chat, I was on the phone to an editor and two of his journalists down in a local paper over in the west of Ireland who want to run a series of articles on a particular issue of suicide down there. And they are actively looking for training, and there is an appetite for that out there. And we are more than willing to offer it. And being realistic, there's no point in us setting up one day and say, oh, journalists, you know, come in, come meet us and let's have a chat. It has to be one-on-one or small focus groups, small workshops, because journalists don't have the time. They don't have the time to be, I won't say dictated to, but really just explore your own attitudes toward mental health.
To be brought into a boardroom where exactly 20 of them are there.
Exactly. At least this way, you're going to have journalists who have experience of covering these issues, and they can say, well, when I covered this, this is the issue I had, or I said it this way and I got in trouble for that, and you know, what's right, what's wrong? You know, these smaller focused workshops, I think, really are going to be more beneficial. And if any journalists out there or editors are listening, to get in touch.
And it is important to point out that the Headline training is for free.
Oh, absolutely.
It is provided free of charge.
That's why we exist. Yeah, definitely.
So get out there if you're wondering how to properly report on these matters. You mentioned as well, journalists are often the first people to come on scenes for these things. Do you think that journalists need to protect their own mental health as well? Because obviously they're running from story to story and they might not sit to think for a minute about what they've just seen and how that might impact them in a day-to-day way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Even my own experience of covering refugee stories in Greece, it finds a way into your brain. And when you're sitting there in an afternoon, it could be the next week, it could be 6 months later, it will work its way out. And I think journalists have a responsibility to themselves, and editors and anyone in senior management working in the Irish media need to realise that journalists will be exposed to traumatic events, whether that's suicide, murder, suicide, mental ill health, whatever it might be. They need to be aware of their own mental health. And there are a lot of programs beginning internationally on this. So self-care packages for journalists will definitely be something that we'll be moving towards.
And what would you recommend to journalists who have been in those situations? How did you manage to kind of overcome that yourself?
Oh, one word, therapy. That's a great way out of it. I would say in Ireland, certainly from the research, it shows that most journalists, most news reporters, so I'm talking about quick turnaround here, there would be a lot of informal chats amongst themselves in the newsroom, maybe. There wouldn't necessarily be institutional supports, especially for freelance reporters. The more I'm looking into it, the more I see that there's just no supports for freelance reporters, because if they're not on staff, then they're probably not on contract, which means they probably aren't part of an employment assistance program. And most employment assistance programs these days would have a facility to have therapy or counselling or whatever it might be, you know.
I know in my 4 years as being a journalist, I've only heard of people kind of being offered counselling in one case, and that was a particularly harrowing, long court case where there was an awful lot of detail, an awful lot of stuff that, of course, was never reported to the public, yeah, but journalists had to sit through it all. Yeah. And there was, in certain situations, an attitude of, "Ah, no, sure, I'm grand. I wouldn't need counselling for that kind of thing."
Yeah. Yeah, that's what our research is saying as well. That attitude is definitely there, and that's fine. We'll respect it. But it's the journalists and producers who are covering more long format that are very open about the fact that their overexposure to traumatic content has left an impact on them. I know RTE in particular have a very good program for mental health supports for the employees, and it's supported. It's advertised, it's out there. They're like, if you need this, we've got you, which is fantastic, which is great. Love to see it in every newsroom in the country.
And I'd say a lot of probably newsrooms and stuff probably think of people that need counselling because of things they've reported on. You'd picture those people maybe in a war zone, or
yeah, of course, you know, that's always the way.
Or as you said, you know, talking to refugees or that mm-hmm, kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But probably they need to look a bit closer to home in terms of, you know, protecting the health of their employees who are covering stories in Ireland. And we've had
absolutely
many cases of tough
really,
cases that people
really
have been
tough
covering.
Cases. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even lately, was it last month, the Garda Wellbeing Survey came out that first responders are suffering massively from PTSD. But it's
and
this,
of course they are,
but it's constant low level trauma. So maybe you might not have experienced the trauma yourself, but it is that constant exposure to low level trauma every day. Like, I often think people who cover the family courts, I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how they do it. It's not for me. But that's traumatic, and it has to work its way into you through some way. Now, whether that manifests itself in you maybe having more than you should to drink, or maybe in turning you into an absolute alcoholic, maybe it manifests itself in an aggressive attitude when really you don't need it, or you don't want to have an aggressive attitude. It'll manifest itself in different ways. And there are plenty of people out there now who have spent a lot of time researching this area who can back it up.
And I don't want to sound like I'm saying any cliches here or anything, but I suppose it's not a sign of weakness to seek
Absolutely
help.
Absolutely not. It's perfectly normal to have these reactions. And the thing is, I suppose there is help out there, but I think the more recognition that there is within the industry that this is an issue, or it might be an issue down the line, the better. And that has to come from top down, by the way. It can't just be journalists knocking on the door saying, hey, listen, I found this story tough, maybe I'll take a back seat on the next one. That's not realistic. That's not going to happen. I know I certainly wouldn't have said it to my editor back in the day, because then he wouldn't have given me the good stories, you know? It has to be a top-down approach to better mental health for journalists.
And I know we have been talking a lot about stories that are being covered, but I know from your research findings that you've found that journalists and producers say they're ill-equipped to cover issues like schizophrenia and bipolar disease and that kind of thing. And so they decide to not cover them at all rather than cover them and get that wrong. What would your attitude to that kind of attitude be?
Well, in general, what we see in, and this isn't just Irish media, this is global, the attitude towards severe mental illness is a recurring link to violence. And that just isn't factual. More often than not, people with severe mental illnesses will be the victims of violent crime, more so than the perpetrators. So that needs to be acknowledged, and it's not really covered in Irish media. You see, especially with schizophrenia, there's this link with violence, or then there's the question of, oh, schizophrenia, is that like split personality? Is that like bipolar? What is that exactly? And you know, there's just this dearth of content there that really should be. It's a really interesting area, and it's not to say that it's everywhere, but like 1% of the population will suffer a schizophrenic episode. So let's explore it more, but do it responsibly. Don't just go for the cheap, easy headline of schizo, craze, lunatic on the, you know, it's lazy. And oftentimes when there is maybe a very brutal crime, it's a very easy thing to quickly make a link with mental illness. Maybe they were just a bad guy.
I was going to bring this up with you because often, as you said, when there is a brutal crime, maybe like a murder, suicide, mm-hmm. or something like that, that people will immediately say, mm-hmm.
Always,
"Oh, but we can't give out about that person because they probably had mm-hmm. a mental illness."
And then you have the additional problem of the guards not coming out with straightforward statements. So then you're forcing the journalist to speak to the local priest or to speak to the local
politician, or
the shopkeeper, whatever. Oh yeah, I always thought he was a lovely man. Do you know? And straight away, you've got misrepresentation there, not just of maybe a particular mental illness, but of a story. It's, I won't say it's lazy. There are definite challenges in the way of journalists covering these stories correctly. I suppose our job now is to see those challenges and face them and try and come up with solutions. But that has to be with us working with the industry. I mean, it's one thing I've found really disappointing, I suppose, since I started in Headline, is the lack of engagement with members of the Irish media who really just have no time for guidelines and have no desire to even entertain the idea of irresponsible journalism. As far as they're concerned,
is that like a free speech, free press kind of attitude?
Of course, absolutely. And that's fine, but if you're having issues following guidelines, then talk to us about it. Let's find a solution. Let's see what those issues are. Is this just straightforward free speech and censorship, or do you have other issues with it? Whatever it might be, just engage with us and let us try and work together to make representation better.
In Ireland, is there kind of an attitude towards trying to sensationalise a story to sell more papers or to have more people tune into your radio show or those
in general,
situations?
I would say no. I think it's improved leaps and bounds. Definitely.
So in terms of what is going, like what do you see as kind of the common problems with reporting on suicide mental health issues in Ireland, and what do you think the journalists should, maybe if they're even unaware of what they're doing, what should they be looking out for?
In general, it's language. It's using things like committed suicide.
Mm. Are pictures a problem?
Pictures are a problem when it's to do with mental illnesses like eating disorders, like anorexia. If you put up images of people from pro-anorexia sites, that's pretty problematic, because essentially you're glamorizing it, you're glorifying it. Mm. So I know BodyWise have big issues with that.
There needs to be a balance between protecting people and supporting people while also reporting the facts and getting the information out there into the public domain. What do you think is the best way for that to be achieved?
It's through engaging with proper mental health supports, through charities who actively support people with personal experiences. It's also about, I suppose, it's through building trust. See what your track record is like, and charities can easily check that with us. If they are concerned that somebody they might put forward for interview is potentially vulnerable, then that's going to be problematic. I suppose the idea would be get in touch and see what we can do for you. It's always better to have first-hand experience. So if Headline or Sea Change, which is another program we work with, if we can find somebody who'll speak to you, then great. And we're in a good position to find people.
And in terms of, I mean, you're only in the job 5 months. Yeah. What are your aims for your time at Headline?
It really is about getting the industry to work with the mental health sector and the mental health sector to work better with the industry. There has to be better collaboration. It can't be us against them attitude. No one wins, because you've got mental health people saying, we're not represented. You've got journalists saying, we don't know how to represent you because you won't talk to us. So there has to be some sort of a middle ground that we can find.
Okay, well, we'll wish you the best of luck with that, Anya. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's all for this installment of the Media Matters podcast. If anyone was affected by the issues raised during this episode, you can call Samaritans free at any time from any phone on 116 123 or Pieta House on 1850 247 247. Thanks so much to Anya O'Mara from Headline for taking the time to chat to me, and thanks to you all for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please share Media Matters on your social media channels, rate us on iTunes, and subscribe. If you have feedback or any suggestions for future interviewees, tweet me on Colette_Sexton. Until next time.